Welcome to The Greek Current, a podcast by Halk and Kathimerini. I'm your host, Thanos Davelis. Egypt has been coming under conflicting pressures as the war in Gaza unfolds, both from Israel, the U.S., the EU, Hamas, and its public, all while looking at a potential economic crisis at home, leading to a difficult balancing act for its president. Despite these pressures, Egypt's role in this conflict has become increasingly pivotal for the U.S. The recent visit by CIA Director William Burns to Egypt and Congress's exceptionally fast confirmation of Washington's new ambassador to Egypt underscore this importance. Sean Matthews joins me to discuss the tightrope Egypt's President Sisi is walking amid the war in Gaza and look at the increasingly pivotal role Cairo is playing. Sean Matthews is a journalist for Middle East Eye based in Greece and the wider region, writing about business, security, and politics. Sean, great to have you back on The Greek Current.
Thanks for having me on, Thano.
Sean, is President Sisi walking a tricky tightrope right now as the war in Gaza unfolds?
Yeah, Thano, it's a tricky tightrope for Sisi, and it's also a very dangerous tightrope. The stakes are really, really high for his regime right now. Egypt, like every other Arab country and many Muslim countries in the world, has seen an outpouring of anger, really rage, against Israel. What makes Egypt's case so unique is two or three elements. One is Egypt is Israel's historic peace partner. It was the first country to sign a peace treaty with Israel in 1979. And ever since then, Egypt has, you know, really been the public face of this kind of Israeli-Arab security cooperation that's done below the surface. But at the same time, Egypt never witnessed a flourishing of people-to-people ties. So the peace between Egypt and Israel is described as a cold peace. Because unlike what we saw with the Abraham Accords, where there was kind of a flourishing of business ties, cultural ties between the Emiratis and the Israelis, with Egypt, that never happened. And even with the Abraham Accord states now, because of the war in Gaza, much of that people-to-people interaction is pretty much done. So yeah, Egypt's in a very, very tight spot. The other thing that makes Egypt particularly vulnerable from the war in Gaza is that it is the only Arab state that shares a border with Gaza. So any spillover in fighting is going to be directly felt by Egypt. Compounding issues for Sisi is that, you know, Gaza comes up against the Sinai Peninsula, where the Egyptians have been fighting a decade-long battle against Islamic insurgents, local affiliates of Islamic State. So Sisi is really worried. Compounding these challenges for Sisi regarding the war in Gaza is massive public frustration with the state of Egypt's economy. Egypt's in one of its worst economic crises right now. Experts say it's probably the worst in 50 years. So there's a lot of public anger, a lot of public frustration on the street. And Egyptians that I speak with are just teed off. You know, the middle class is shrinking in Egypt. There's massive inflation. So Sisi's having to deal with a bad economy, a raging war, and he's coming under pressure from his allies, the U.S. and Israel. Israel has stepped up to try and get Egypt to take in Palestinians from Gaza. At the same time, Israel and the U.S. floated a plan that kind of envisions in some way Egypt taking on a security role in the Gaza Strip after the war is over to help manage security there. And then if you compound that on top of everything, Sisi's going into an election next month. Sisi's basically guaranteed to win the election, but he does not want to have a mass public display against him during this time. What Sisi wants is a very smooth, quiet election, and he wants to just consolidate his rule over that. So this war comes at a really, really tough time for him. And also, he's under, you know, massive pressure from his allies.
Speaking of this, you know, pressure from Egypt's allies, Sisi has rejected calls to take in Palestinian refugees and has also rejected a U.S. proposal for Cairo to temporarily manage security in Gaza after the war until the Palestinian Authority can take over, given a victory over Hamas. Why are these red lines for Egypt?
Yeah, Thano. So as you said, these are both red lines for Sisi. First one, the forced displacement of Palestinians. Sisi's actually pushed back publicly on this, quite publicly, actually. So he said that Egypt has a complete, total rejection of forced displacements of Palestinians, saying that that would lead to nothing more than a final liquidation of the Palestinian cause. The memory for Sisi from that is the Nakba in 1948, when almost 1 million Palestinians were displaced from their lands. And Sisi is very, very cognizant of not allowing a repeat of that. First, because he knows his public wouldn't tolerate it. And he said as much. He said that if he's forced to take in the displacement of Palestinians, he would allow his citizens to go out in the street and protest in their millions, which is remarkable coming from Sisi, who has tight control on the streets. He's, you know, severely limits protests and public displays of anger. So I think, you know, that statement encapsulates just how much of a red line this is for Sisi. On the other side, which he's pushed back on more quietly, my sources tell me, and now it's being reported more widely, is this call from Israel and the U.S. to in some way take on a security presence in the Gaza Strip if and when Hamas is defeated. The war is still going on, so we don't know what the fate of Hamas will be after the war. But Sisi's pushed back really, really forcefully on this. When I published my article that you're referencing on Monday, you know, my sources were telling me that Egyptian officials have been delivering those messages to the U.S. basically for weeks now, that Egypt has no interest in a security role in Gaza. We saw this week Bill Burns came to Egypt, CIA director, and he was given a personal message by Sisi that they have no interest in that. The Wall Street Journal reported it. I've been told that Sisi even lashed out at Burns, actually, over that. So really aggressive rejection of all of these demands, which I think surprised a lot of Israeli and Western officials, because I think they thought with the tight economic spot Sisi's in, he might be more compliant. So the Egyptians that I speak with say, you know, the way that Sisi has rejected these demands on him just underscores how this is a no-go zone for Egypt. They have no interest in it.
Sean, are Egypt's concerns being heard, let's say, in Washington and Brussels?
Yeah. So Sisi's red lines have been respected. I think in the early weeks of the war, there was hope in the U.S. among some officials that Sisi might be more open to accepting Palestinian refugees. And in Israel, certainly there's been a lot of hope. I mean, analysts, experts tell me they're just chomping at the bit to get Egypt to take on a security role and kind of relieve that pressure from the Israelis. But yeah, those red lines have been respected. And the biggest proof of that is that we saw President Joe Biden in a phone call with Sisi publicly declared that he would guarantee that there is no forced displacement of Palestinians from Gaza. So that was a big win for Sisi. He got that in a public readout of his phone call with Biden. On the security role, I think at this stage, Western officials and Israelis, I think they are coming to terms with the fact that Egypt doesn't want to touch this. So they want to see the Israelis go it alone. So Sisi's red lines have been respected. I think in Brussels and the West, they've been received clearly. That's only because of very, very aggressive Egyptian lobbying, I should add. I think in Israel, we're likely going to see the Israelis keep holding out some kind of hope that Egypt might come in and assist them with security indirectly, for sure, but then also on the ground.
While Secretary Blinken did not stop in Egypt, Sean, during his recent Middle East visit, CIA Director William Burns, as you mentioned, did. And we've also seen Congress push through an exceptionally fast confirmation of Washington's new ambassador to Egypt. Is this war really underscoring the centrality of Egypt to U.S. policy in the region?
Yeah, it is, Thano. And, you know, the war, it's kind of an old lesson. Diplomats in the region will tell you that whenever war erupts in Gaza, Egypt kind of just comes back on everybody's radar. And in this case, because the war is so big and so bloody, Egypt is really the central player in this conflict. It's hard to see a resolution of the war in Gaza or any kind of ceasefire or even longer term truce without Egypt's involvement in it. So Egypt is really central to this war. And that's because Egypt talks to everybody in this conflict. So Egypt is a peace treaty partner with Israel. Egypt is a key U.S. ally. But then Egypt also, which is the most interesting aspect of all of this, Egypt has ties to Hamas. Egypt is no friend to Hamas. Hamas's roots lie in Egypt's banned Muslim Brotherhood. But Egypt does maintain ties with the group. And those ties are instrumental for Egypt because it helps them maintain security in the Gaza Strip. So at times we've seen, you know, the relationship between Hamas and Egypt really stretched. There was a time when Hamas was working with Islamists in Sinai who were fighting against Egypt. At the same time, we've seen Hamas and Egypt cooperate to root out Islamic State in Sinai. And it's this ability of Egypt to kind of manage all these separate files, the Israeli file, the Hamas file, leverage its ties with the U.S., that makes them a central player in all of this for two reasons. So as you said, we saw Bill Burns, the CIA director, in Cairo this week. Bill Burns has kind of two key missions here. The one is, you know, the U.S. has been trying to negotiate pauses in the fighting with Israel. We saw yesterday the U.S. came out and said that there'd be 4-hour daily pauses in order to facilitate the movement of Palestinians from northern Gaza into the south amid the fighting. So the U.S. is pushing for pauses in the fighting. Egypt has ties with Israel, ties with Hamas. So its role in any kind of negotiations about pausing fighting is very important. The other key role that Egypt is going to play here, Thano, is the negotiations over the release of some 240 hostages that are being held by Hamas and other armed groups in Gaza. That's a key priority for the Biden administration, and Egypt's going to be instrumental in any of those negotiations. So Egypt really is central here. The other thing that Egypt is central on is border security, actually, right? We know from public statements by Hamas and by the Israeli military that the tunnel network that runs between Sinai and Gaza was active before the war. allowing Hamas to sneak in arms. So Israel, the U.S., they really need Egyptian cooperation to choke the supply of arms into Gaza. Now, that supply, some say it's at a trickle, but it's still open, and they need Egypt to really crack down 100% on that as we look towards a protracted military campaign here.
As you've laid out, Sean, you know, this war in Gaza undoubtedly poses risks to Sisi, but as experts have told you, also potential rewards. What does Egypt and its president stand to gain?
So I think the first thing, we've already seen Egypt gain, at least short term here. The narrative around Egypt, especially in Washington, and the lead up before the war, was pretty negative for Sisi's regime. Egypt was implicated in the alleged corruption probe that former chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Democratic Senator Robert Menendez, had accepted bribes from Egyptian intelligence in exchange for facilitating the transfer of military aid to Egypt. You know, the optics of that were really brutal for Cairo. And we saw a lot of the complaints from Democratic lawmakers, mainly, come back to the surface, complaints about Egypt's human rights record under Sisi. And Ben Cardin, Bob Menendez's successor, actually put a block on about $230 million in arms sales to Egypt. Now, officials that I speak with would tell me, you know, that security cooperation, military-to-military ties, diplomatic ties continued, but the image of Sisi and his government was damaged because of this Menendez case. Now, if you look what we're seeing in Washington, it's a total 360. As you mentioned, there's now a new U.S. ambassador to Egypt. Ambassador Garg's confirmation, one U.S. official told me it was exceptionally fast, perhaps the fastest you can get for a U.S. ambassador to a country. And, you know, we saw the critics of Egypt in Washington, Senators Christopher Murphy, back the appointment of the ambassador. And that's because there's a recognition that Egypt is central here. So I think, number one, the optics around Egypt on the Hill have totally changed. The other big thing that's changed for Egypt is that we're talking now about financial relief for Sisi's government. So a lot of the reporting that's been coming out, and this is what my sources tell me as well, and it's been widely reported, is that the Israelis especially were floating a lot of deals and a lot of offers that would see some kind of financial relief for Egypt should they take in a forced displacement of Palestinians. As we said, you know, Egypt drew a red line and they said no forced displacement. But the talks about financial relief for Egypt are still continuing. So despite drawing a red line, Egypt still might get some kind of financial package out of this deal. There's a few things in the works right now. In Brussels, the Europeans are looking at a refugee aid deal for Egypt, something along the lines of what they signed with Tunisia, perhaps, where Sisi would get some aid and some economic incentives for dealing with an influx of refugees, which even outside of the Palestinians, Egypt is dealing with. I mean, Egypt is a country right now surrounded by war. They have a war in Sudan, still a festering insurgency in Sinai, Libya is unstable. So any kind of aid deal with the Europeans would be a huge help for Sisi. The other thing that we're talking about is now expanding Egypt's IMF deal. Egypt wants to increase its loan from $3 billion to $5 billion. Experts that I speak with and Western officials say that, you know, there's a good chance that the U.S. and Brussels are going to, you know, try and convince the IMF to relax some of the terms of that agreement. So Egypt really was under a lot of pressure on some key areas here in order to get that economic reform package. There's a lot of pressure on Sisi to privatize industries in Egypt, which are controlled by the military. And under Sisi's rule, Egypt's military has really greatly expanded its economic footprint. And one of the conditions for the IMF loan is that, you know, they wanted to see privatization. They also wanted to see a freer floating of Egypt's currency. So, you know, Egypt tightly controls its currency. And over the last couple of years, they've been devaluing the Egyptian pound per request by the IMF and just necessity to do that. But there's a lot of pressure on Egypt to have another devaluation. Now, I think a devaluation will probably go through, but longer-term horizon, I think Sisi is going to come under probably less pressure from the IMF to do a devaluation because of the war. So on the optics side, you know, Sisi is now seen as central. But then on the economic side, he stands in a really good chance to get some economic relief for an economy that's really under tremendous pressure. The other big win for Sisi here, Zano, is that, you know, as you said, and as we discussed, he's central again to the Middle East. So Egypt's role as a power broker and as a regional linchpin has been revived because of the war in Gaza. There's not going to be a settlement of this war without Egypt. And, you know, as we said, that's because Egypt has ties to Israel through its peace treaty. Egypt maintains ties to Hamas. Egypt's military intelligence is extremely, extremely involved in Gaza. It's a file that they know intimately. So there's no way that the Israelis and the Americans are going to get anything done in Gaza without Egypt, especially on the border where Egypt guarantees security along its border with Sinai. Those are the benefits. Sisi also has a lot of risks. Sisi is very much aware that what happens in Palestine often doesn't stay in Palestine, and that the war, public displays of anger against Israel on the street in Egypt, could vary much more with these domestic grievances, and that he has to watch everything very, very carefully.
Sean, great speaking with you. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, Thano.
In other news, several EU countries on Thursday threw their weight behind Cyprus's plan to supply Gaza with humanitarian aid, but several hurdles remain, mainly over the feasibility of landing big cargo safely in Gaza's tiny port facilities. The president of Cyprus, Nikos Christodoulidis, presented his country's proposal to open a maritime corridor to help deliver more aid to the Gaza Strip during the Paris Peace Forum organized by French President Emmanuel Macron. The plan is aimed at expanding capacity for humanitarian relief to the Gaza Strip beyond limited deliveries being made through the Rafah crossing between Egypt and the Palestinian enclave since Israel began its air and ground offensive in Gaza. Finally, this year's olive oil production is projected to be drastically reduced, owing not just to previous year's overproduction, but also to a lack of work hands. This is contributing to a surge in olive oil prices, driven in part by 2 years of drought in Spain, with benchmark prices in Greece, Spain, and Italy more than tripling from their 2019 levels. This has also meant opportunity for criminals across the Mediterranean, warehouse break-ins, dilution of premium oil with inferior product, and falsification of shipping data are on the rise in the olive-growing heartlands of Greece, Spain, and Italy. That wraps up today's episode of The Greek Current. Thanks for tuning in.